Halfway down the stairs is a stair where I sit. There isn't any other stair quite like it. I'm not at the bottom, I'm not at the top. So this is the stair where I always stop. Halfway up the stairs isn't up and isn't down. It isn't in the nursery, it isn't in the town. And all sorts of funny thoughts run around my head. It isn't really anywhere, it's somewhere else instead.
You have a magic carpet that will whiz you through the air to Spain or Maine or Africa if you just tell it where. So will you let it take you where you've never been before, or will you buy some drapes to match and use it on your floor? One day when man had set out for a distant star, the dinosaurs came back to life and tidied up the barren wastes he had left behind him. Man was only allowed back when he had agreed that the earth should be shared and enjoyed by everyone. A beautiful and thoroughly modern fable. A man stood on a hill and looked at a star. All he thought about and dreamed about was the star. Trees grew tall, climbed to the top of a tree and tried to reach the star, but he was nowhere near it. The trees filled with birds, which flew still nearer the star. "I must fly," said the man. "I have money. I have many men working for me. I must fly. Somehow I must fly." The man owned some factories nearby. "Build me a rocket," he ordered. "Cut down the trees, dig out the coal, burn whatever will burn, and build me a rocket to reach the stars." All day and all night the fires in the factories huffed and puffed. Smoke and fumes and waste and rubbish poured out and piled up. At last the rocket was ready, but there was nowhere for it to be launched. Everywhere was piled high with heaps of waste from the factories. The man took his rocket to the top of a heap and set off for the stars. When he landed on the star, the man looked about him. There was nothing to see. He walked and walked, looking for something to admire. But still there was nothing. No trees, no flowers, and not a blade of grass. Sadly, he looked around, but the only thing of wonder was another star, far off in the black sky. "I will go to that star," said the man, and away he went again in his rocket. On Earth, the piles of rubbish smoldered and burned, and the mountains rumbled. Far below the surface, the heat disturbed the sleep of the dinosaurs, who had lain hidden away for hundreds of years. They heaved and stretched. The earth cracked, and out came all sorts of creatures. A dinosaur held his nose as he looked around. "Ugh," he said, "there's nothing on this planet but mess. If we're going to live here, we'll have to get busy." Some of the dinosaurs burned rubbish in volcanoes. Dancing dinosaurs broke up the roads. As rubbish was cleared, green shoots appeared, bursting through cracks and climbing over old forgotten walls. Telegraph poles and iron pylons vanished beneath the trailing blossoms, and a fresh new forest of flowers and trees spread like a smile around the world. And all this time the man was heading for his new star, unaware that it was the very same planet Earth he had once left behind him. He landed in a jungle, alive with beautiful plants, sweet with the scent of flowers, and filled with the song of birds. "At last," he said, "I have found my paradise." "Whose paradise?" said the biggest dinosaur. "Mine," said the man. "Rubbish," said the dinosaur. "What do you mean by rubbish?" said the man. "You can't talk to me like that. Why, with a head as small as yours, you can't possibly have enough brain to look after this star." "Our heads are the same size," said the dinosaur, "but my heart is much bigger than yours. If you had been ruled by your heart instead of your head, you would not have destroyed this paradise before. I destroyed it, said the man. You mean this is earth? Yes, it is, said the dinosaur. But it can't be, said the man. It is, said the dinosaur. The man looked about him and saw that the dinosaur was right. Please, may I have a small part of it back, he asked. Please, just a hill, or a tree, or a flower. No, said the dinosaur, not a part of it, but all of it. It is all yours, but remember it is also mine. Remember that. This time the earth belongs to everyone, not parts of it to certain people, but all of it to everyone, to be enjoyed and cared for. Yes, everyone, sang the birds and the cats and the mice and the mammoths, the serpents, the dodos and the apes. Everyone, came the chorus from all living things. Everyone, everyone, everyone.
Sarah, Cynthia, Sylvia Stout would not take the garbage out. She scoured the pots and scraped the pans, candy the yams and spiced the hams. Though her daddy would scream and shout, she simply would not take the garbage out. So it piled up to the ceilings, coffee grounds, potato peelings, brown bananas, rotten cheese, chunks of sour cottage cheese. It filled the can, it covered the floor, it cracked the window and blocked the door. Bacon rinds and chicken bones, drippy ends of ice cream cones, prune pits, peach pits, orange peels, gloppy glumps of cold oatmeal, pizza crusts and withered greens, soggy beans and tangerines, crusts of blackbird butter toast, gristly bits of beefy roast. The garbage rolled on down the hall. It raised the roof, it broke the wall. Greasy napkins, cookie crumbs, globs of gooey bubblegum, cellophane from green bologna, rubbery, blubbery macaroni, peanut butter caked and dry, curled milk and crusts of pie, moldy melons, dried up mustard, eggshells mixed with lemon custard, cold French fries and rancid meat, yellow lumps of cream of wheat. At last the garbage reached so high, finally it touched the sky, and all the neighbors moved away, and none of her friends would come to play. Finally, Sarah Cynthia Stout said, okay, I'll take the garbage out. But then, of course, it was too late. The garbage reached across the state, from New York to the Golden Gate, and there in the garbage sheeted hay, poor Sarah met an awful fate that I cannot right now relate, because the hour is much too late. But children remember Sarah Stout and always take the garbage out.
No one's hanging stockings up. No one's baking pie. No one's looking up to see a new star in the sky. No one's talking brotherhood. No one's giving gifts. And no one loves a Christmas tree on March the 25th.
Crocodile went to the dentist, and he sat down in the chair, and the dentist said, now tell me, sir, why does it hurt and where? And the crocodile said, I'll tell you the truth, I've got a terrible ache in my tooth. And he opened his jaws so wide, that the dentist climbed right inside. And the dentist laughed and said, oh, isn't this fun? And pulled the teeth out one by one. And the crocodile cried, you're hurting me. Please let me put your pliers down and let me go. And the dentist just laughed with a ho, 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 and said, I've 12 left to go. Oops, that's the wrong one, I confess, but what's one crocodile's tooth more or less? Then suddenly the jaws went snap, and the dentist was gone right off the map. And where he went to, one could only guess, to the north, the south, the east, or the west. He left no forwarding address. But what's one dentist, more or less?
The little fish eats the tiny fish. The big fish eats the little fish. So only the biggest fish gets fat. Do you know any folks like that?
You may leave the clam on the ocean floor. It's all the same to the clam. For 100,000 years or more, it's all the same to the clam. You can bury him deep in mud and muck, or carry him around to bring you luck, or use him for a hockey puck, it's all the same to the clam. You can call him Jim or Frank or Nell, it's all the same to the clam, or make an ashtray from his shell, it's all the same to the clam. You can take him riding on the train or leave him sitting in the rain. You'll never hear the clam complain. It's all the same to the clam. Yes, the world may stop or the world may spin. It's all the same to the clam. The sky may come a-falling in. It's all the same to the clam. And man may sing his endless songs of wronging rights and righting wrongs. The clam just sets and gets along. It's all the same to the clam.
God says to me with a kind of a smile, "Hey, how would you like to be God a while and steer the world?" "Okay," says I, I'll give it a try. Where do I set? How much do I get? What time is lunch? When can I quit? "Give me back that wheel," says God. "I don't think you're quite ready yet." When I am grown to man's estate, I shall be very proud and great, and tell the other girls and boys not to meddle with my toys.
What would you do if you knew there was a lion in the meadow, but your mother wouldn't believe you, and gave you a matchbox with a dragon inside it to scare the lion away, and the dragon was there too? The little boy said, "Mother, there's a lion in the meadow." And the mother said, "Nonsense, little boy." The little boy said, "Mother, there's a big yellow lion in the meadow." And the mother said, "Nonsense, little boy." The little boy said, "Mother, there's a big, roaring, yellow, whiskery lion in the meadow." The mother said, "Little boy, you're making up stories again. There is nothing in the meadow but grass and trees. Go into the meadow and see for yourself." The little boy said, "Mother, I'm scared to go in the meadow because the lion which is there." The mother said, "Little boy, you're making up stories, so I will too. You see this matchbox, take it out into the meadow and open it. In it will be a tiny dragon. The tiny dragon will grow into a great big dragon and it will chase the lion away." The little boy took the matchbox and went away, and the mother went on peeling potatoes. Suddenly the door opened. In rushed a big, roaring, yellow, whiskery lion. "Hide me," it said, "a dragon's after me." The lion hid in the broom cupboard. Then the little boy came running in. "Mother," he said, "that dragon grew too big. There's no lion in the meadow now. There's a dragon in the meadow." The little boy hid in the broom cupboard too. "You should have left me alone," said the lion. "I only eat apples." "But there wasn't a real dragon," said the mother. "I just made the story up." "Well, it turned out to be true after all," said the little boy. "You should have looked in the matchbox first." "That's how it is," said the lion. "Some stories are true and some aren't. But I have an idea. We'll go out and play in the meadow on the other side of the house. There's no dragon there." "I'm glad we're friends now," said the little boy. And the little boy and the big, roaring, yellow, whiskery lion went to play in the other meadow. The dragon stayed where he was, and nobody minded. And the mother never made up a story again.
Said General Clay to General Gore, "Oh, must we fight this silly war? To kill and die is such a bore." "I quite agree," said General Gore. Said General Gore to General Clay, "We could go to the beach today and have some ice cream on the way." "A grand idea," said General Clay. said General Clay to General Gore. We'll build sandcastles on the shore, said General Gore. We'll splash and play. Let's leave right now, said General Clay. Said General Gore to General Clay, but what if the sea is closed today? And what if the sand's been blown away? A dreadful thought, said General Clay. Said General Gore to General Clay, I've always feared the ocean's spray, and we may drown. It's true, we may. It chills my blood, said General Clay. Said General Clay to General Gore, my bathing suit is slightly tore. We'd better go on with our war. I quite agree, said General Gore. Then General Clay charged General Gore as bullets flew and cannons roared. And now, alas, there is no more of General Clay and General Gore.
Barnabas Browning was scared of drowning, so he would never swim or get in a boat or take a bath or cross a moat. He just sat day and night with his door locked tight and the windows nailed down, shaking with fear that a wave might appear. And he cried so many tears that they filled up the room and he drowned.
Our anchor's too big for our ship, so we're sitting here trying to think. If we leave it behind, we'll be lost. If we haul it on board, we will sink. If we sit and keep talking about it, it will soon be too late for our trip. It sure can be rough on a sailor when the anchor's too big for the ship.
Last night, while I lay thinking here, some what-ifs crawled inside my ear and pranced and partied all night long and sang their same old what-if song. What if I'm dumb in school? What if they've closed the swimming pool? What if I get beat up? What if there's poison in my cup? What if I start to cry? What if I get sick and die? What if I flunk that test? What if green hair grows on my chest? What if no one likes me? What if a bolt of lightning strikes me? What if I don't get taller? What if my head starts getting smaller? What if the fish don't bite? What if the wind tears up my kite? What if my parents get divorced? What if they start a war? What if the bus is late? What if my teeth don't grow in straight? What if I tear my pants? What if I never learn to dance? Everything seems swell, and then those nighttime what-ifs strike again.
Would the children like to come forward up here and we'll have a story? Excuse me, girls. You can come too, Carl. Good. Sit down there.
I know, Kate. That's my dad might do it.
Are we all here?
Yeah.
Okay, this is a story. That once upon a time there was a little boy called Peter. And Peter lived with his mother because his father had died when he was very young. And because his father had died, they were very, very poor. And so Peter had to help his mother do lots of things. Peter had to chop the wood for his mother, and he had to do homework, and he had to help mother wash up the rooms and sweep the floors. And Peter, I must tell you something about him. He was a great dreamer. He was always dreaming of things. In the winter time, he was always dreaming about when it would be summer and it would be warm and everything. And in the summertime, he was always dreaming how wonderful it would be when winter was here and he'd be able to play in the snow again. And whenever he had homework to do at night, he was always dreaming, oh, I do wish the homework was finished and it was time for my bed. And when he lay in bed at night and he was frightened he might have nightmares or something, he would dream, oh, I wish it was morning. And then at school, when the teacher was scolding him or he had to work hard at school, he would wish, oh, I do wish it was time to go home. So he was always wishing for time to pass. Now, one day he was out in the forest and he was walking. And he was very tired because he'd been helping his mother that day. And he'd done a lot of hard work at home. In fact, he hadn't been able to go fishing with his friends because of all the work he had to do with his mother. And so his friends had all gone fishing. And he had nothing else to do when he finished his work, so he went for a walk in the forest. and he was so tired that he lay down on this bank and fell asleep. Do you know, when he woke up suddenly, there was an old woman standing beside him. And she said to him, "Peter, you're always dreaming, aren't you? You always wish that it was some other time, that it was tomorrow when it was today." And she said, "Maybe I'll be able to help you. I've got this beautiful silver ball. And inside it, you see in this little hole in the end of the ball, is this little gold thread hanging out." And she said, "The gold thread is your life, Peter. And if you want it to pass a little, you can just pull out a little bit of the thread, and the thread will disappear like smoke, but time will have passed." But she said, "Be very careful, because just a teeny little bit of thread can be a lot of hours. So would you like that, Peter?" And Peter thought that would be a good thing. So he took the silver ball and the thread home, and he thought about it for a number of days. He didn't know what to do. And then one day, he was having a particularly bad time at school. He'd forgotten to do his homework, or he really hadn't tried to do his homework, and the teacher was scolding him for that, and for lots of other things that he was doing at school. And Peter got his little silver ball out of his desk, and he just pulled out a bit of thread, about 2 inches, and oh, he was going home. He was on the way home. So he thought that was pretty good, you know. The teacher had been telling him off, and now time passed and he was on his way home. And as the days passed and the weeks passed and the months passed, he used this more and more. He would pull out a little bit of thread when times were bad and only live for the good times. So Peter was only living when it was nice and it was sunny, or whenever the weather was what he wanted it to be. It would have been very useful here, wouldn't it? And so whenever he wanted sunny weather and it was wet, he just pulled out a little bit, and time passed, and it was just as he wanted it. Now, after a number of months of doing this and years had passed, Peter thought, "Maybe it's just too bad that I really want to be grown up." He was very, very friendly with a girl called Lisa, and he wanted to grow up and marry her. Lisa. And he wanted to grow up and marry her, and he wanted to be at work, and he thought if he could be at work and apprenticed and learn a trade, that he could make lots of money to help his mother out and maybe be able to earn enough money to have somebody at home to help her with the work. So one day he got hold of the thread and he just pulled out a whole lot of it. And my, immediately he found that he was apprenticed as a carpenter, which he really loved doing because his father had been a carpenter. So he was a carpenter, and he really enjoyed that for a number of years because he was learning a trade and it was good and he enjoyed it. Then one day, Carl, he thought, "Well, it would be really nice if I'd finished my apprenticeship and was earning good money and I could marry Lisa." So he pulled out some more thread, and there he was, married to Lisa, and it was his wedding day and it was beautiful. But he did notice that his mother's hair was getting very grey. And he felt a wee bit guilty that maybe if he'd been pulling the thread out, that a lot of time had passed and his mother was getting very old. Anyway, soon there was a child born to the marriage. And that was just great, and he loved it, and Lisa loved the child. But sometimes the little baby would cry and things. And whenever the baby was crying, Peter would just pull out a little bit of thread till the baby was quiet. And that was great. And then more children came along, and it was great. They had about 8 or 9 children. And everything was going fine, and whenever times were bad in the country, Peter would pull out a little bit of thread until times were good again. If the weather was bad, he would pull out a little more thread until it was good weather. And if times were hard at work and he wasn't able to earn any money, he would pull out thread till times were good. Then one day Lisa said to him, "Oh, how marvelous it'll be when the children have all grown up and left home and there'll just be the two of us." So Peter thought about this for a day or two, and then he thought, "Yes, that would be good." So he pulled out a whole lot of thread, and time passed, and all the children had left home, and there was just him and Lisa. Round about this time, he noticed that the thread wasn't gold anymore, that the thread was turning silver, just like Peter's own hair. And he thought, well, he was getting old, and he thought to himself, well, this wouldn't be able to last forever. So he didn't pull the thread out quite so much. But sometimes, you know, if things weren't too good or anything like that, he'd pull out a little more. And Peter was getting pretty old. And he didn't have any, he had a lot of memories, but he couldn't remember them very well because all his life had been fun times. And he couldn't distinguish between one fun time and another fun time. You know, sometimes when you have bad times and you have good times, it's easy to remember the good times because the bad times are in between them. And you remember the good times. But he couldn't remember any particular good times because all times had been good. Because whenever he wanted a good time, he just pulled some thread and his life passed away. So, one day, when he was very tired, he took a walk in the forest. And he, very tired, and he fell asleep on the same bank that he had fallen asleep so many years ago when he was a little boy. And lo and behold, he woke up and there was the same old woman standing over him. But she wasn't any older. She looked exactly the same as she was. And she asked Peter, "Well, how's it been, Peter? How's your life been?" He said, "Well, it wasn't too good, you know." And she said, "Well, is there anything else? Could I have done anything else for you?" And he said, "Well, yes, it would have been nice if you could have pushed the thread back into the silver ball every now and again so that I could have lived a time over again." And she said, "Well, I'm sorry, I can't do that. But I'll tell you what I will do," she said. "I'll grant you one wish, only one wish, and that's all you can have." So do you know what Peter wished for? He wished for his life back again. He said to the old woman, "I would like to live my life all over again, and I'd like to live the bad times with the good times. I don't want to have the silver ball of thread anymore." So she said, "Okay, I'll grant you that wish." And immediately Peter woke up in his bed, just as he was a little boy, many, many years beforehand. And he thought to himself, "Well, I'm going to be very careful now what I say about wishing for something, wishing that it was tomorrow, or wishing that the weather was better, or it was the end of the week, or that my homework was finished." And so he lived his life all over again. And that's the end. Thank you. You can go and sit down.
Lester was given a magic wish by the goblin who lived in the banyan tree. And with his wish, he wished for two more wishes. So now, instead of just one wish, he had three. And with each one of these, he simply wished for three more wishes, which gave him three old wishes plus nine new. And with each of these 12, he slyly wished for three more wishes, which added up to 46, or is it 52? Well, anyway, he used each wish to wish for wishes until he had 5,007,018,034. And he spread them on the ground, and he clapped his hands, and he danced around and skipped and sang, and then sat down and wished for some more, and more, and more. They multiplied while other people smiled and cried, and loved and reached and touched and felt. Lester sat amid his wealth, stacked mountain high like stacks of gold, sat and counted and grew old. And then one Thursday night they found him dead, with all of his wishes piled around him. And they counted the lot and they found that not a single one was missing. All shiny and new. Here, take a few and think of Lester as you do, in a world of apples and kisses and shoes, he wasted his wishes on wishing.
Almost perfect, but not quite. Those were the words of Mary Hume at her 7th birthday party. Looking round the ribboned room, "This tablecloth is pink, not white. Almost perfect, but not quite." Almost perfect, but not quite. Those were the words of grown-up Mary, talking about her handsome beau, the one she wasn't going to marry. "Squeezes me a bit too tight. Almost perfect, but not quite." Almost perfect, but not quite. Those were the words of old Miss Hume, teaching in her 7th grade room, grading papers in the gloom, late at night, up in her room. "They never cross their T's just right. Almost perfect, but not quite." 98, the day she died, complaining about the spotless floor. People shook their heads and sighed, "Guess that she'll like heaven more." Up went her soul on feathered wings, out the door and up out of sight. Another voice from heaven came, "Almost perfect, but not quite."
Once, spoke the language of the flowers. Once I understood each word that the caterpillar said. Once I smiled at the secret gossip of the starlings and shared a conversation with the housefly in my bed. Once I heard and answered all the questions of the crickets and joined the crying of each falling, dying flake of snow. Once I spoke the language of flowers. How did it go? How did it go?
Hector the Collector collected bits of string, collected dolls with broken heads and rusty bells that would not ring, pieces out of picture puzzles, bent up nails and ice cream sticks, twists of wire, worn out tires, paper bags and broken bricks, old chipped vases, half shoelaces, Gatling guns that wouldn't shoot, leaky boats that wouldn't float, and stopped up horns that wouldn't toot. Butter knives that had no handles, copper keys that fit no locks, rings that were too small for fingers, dried up leaves and patched up socks. Worn out belts that had no buckles, electric trains that had no tracks, airplane models, broken bottles, three-legged chairs and cups with cracks. Hector the Collector loved these things with all his soul, loved them more than shining diamonds, loved them more than glistening gold. Hector called to all the people, "Come and share my treasure trunk." And all the silly, sightless people came and looked and called it junk.
When I was a little girl, 90 years ago, my father made me an ark. And I know the voice behind a closed door, booming like God's, "Make it 300 cubits long." The Noah he carved had a hammer in one hand and a mop in the other, and Mrs. Noah carried a saw. There were two spotted leopards, two meek sheep, two gray horses, and two white doves. They were already in their compartment in the ark when my father gave it to me. The smaller gray horse looked sad, and I always stroked her with my finger. Until to this day, there is not much paint left on her, except for two little eyes which look grateful. Over the years, as I grew up, my father added more animals. A pair of brown bears, a bull and a cow, a hen and a rooster, and two striped tigers. And oh, I enjoyed playing with them. When I got married, my husband teased me, but I remember how gently he carried the ark to our new home. I taught our children the story of Noah and how their grandfather had shouted behind a closed door, "Make it 300 cubits long." Now, everyone is gone, and the ark holds their memory. Our fun and sorrow seem to form a rainbow, and it warms me like sunshine.
Said the little boy, "Sometimes I drop my spoon." Said the little old man, "I do that too." The little boy whispered, "I wet my pants." "I do that too," laughed the old man. Said the little boy, "I often cry." The old man nodded, "So do I." "But worst of all," said the boy, "it seems grown-ups don't pay attention to me." And he felt the warmth of her wrinkled old hand. "I know what you mean," said the little old man.
How many slams in an old screen door? Depends how loud you shut it. How many slices in a bread? Depends how thin you cut it. How much good inside a day? Depends how good you live 'em. How much love inside a friend? Depends how much you give 'em.
A piece of sky broke off and fell through the crack in the ceiling right into my soup. Kerplop! I really must state that I usually hate lentil soup, but I ate every drop. Delicious, delicious. A bit like plaster. but so delicious. Goodness sake, I could have eaten a lentil soup lake. It's amazing the difference a bit of sky can make.
I went to find the pot of gold that's waiting where the rainbow ends. I searched and searched and searched and searched and searched and searched, and then there it was, deep in the grass, under an old and twisty bough. It's mine, it's mine, it's mine at last. What do I search for now?
This bridge will only take you halfway there, to those mysterious lands you long to see, through gypsy camps and swirling Arab fairs, and moonlit woods where unicorns run free. So come and walk a while with me and share the twisting trails and wondrous worlds I've known. But this bridge will only take you halfway there. The last few steps you'll have to take alone.
Little boy kneels at the foot of the bed, droops on the little hand, little gold head. Hush, hush, whisper who dares. Christopher Robin is saying his prayers.
God bless Mommy, I know that's right. Wasn't it fun in the bath tonight? The cold so cold and the hot so hot. Oh, God bless Daddy, I've quite forgot. If I open my fingers a little bit more, I can see Nanny's dressing gown on the door. It's a beautiful blue, but it hasn't a hood. Oh, God bless Nanny and make her good. Mine has a hood, and I lie in bed and pull the hood right over my head. And I shut my eyes and curl up small, and nobody knows I'm there at all. Oh, thank you, God, for a lovely day. And what was the other I had to say? I said, Daddy, so what can it be? Oh, now I remember it. God bless me.
Little boy kneels at the foot of the bed, droops on little hands, little gold head. Hush, hush, whisper who dares. Christopher Robin is saying his prayers.